You can be seated. Thank you, guys. It's good to see everybody this morning, as I said earlier, and we'll dive right in. For those of you who might be new to us this week, that weren't here last week, basically what we do is we have a discussion, and then there's a chapter that follows in the book that you can read. And so if you say, well, I haven't read the chapter yet, that's okay. You can read it this week because we just basically introduce it. And then the following week, we'll go on from there. But if you were here last week, you know that this morning we're going to talk about daddy deprivation, or the absentee fatherhood would be how I would title it. And so if you've read ahead, that's okay too. Some of this might be a refresher. Some of it is just some new thoughts, some thoughts that I've had. I have to tell you, as I was kind of getting ready for this morning, I kind of thought about all the folks that are here. And at first I was like, you know, I don't know that this is really applicable. And then I read the chapter and I thought to myself, you know, no, this is really applicable. And in fact, it reminded me a little bit of when I was in college. For those of you who don't know, I was a biblical studies major, or biblical theology it was called at the time, as well as a psychology major. And one of the things that we would do in psychology classes is, as you're learning, especially abnormal psych, but as you're learning the different things that go on in people's lives and the different conditions out there, you begin to, self-medicate, but that's not really it. You begin to self-diagnose. You start seeing yourself and your family in all of these different conditions. Like when we learn about bipolar disorder, I identified my mom very quickly, right? Never mind, forget that. But you begin to kind of just self-identify with things. And so as I was reading through the chapter, I caught myself a couple of times saying, yeah, I thought I was raised in a great home, and I was raised in a great home. But as I read those things, I thought, you know, I can relate to some of this. And so anyway, as we talk this morning, I sense you'll probably be in that category as well. Also, I want you to know as we go into it this morning that everything that I say, this is me just looking into a mirror, okay? And I've been very convicted about some things as I studied, and I hope you will be as well. So without any further ado, let's talk about absentee fatherhood, or daddy deprivation. Let's begin with going back to the beginning of time. That's where we started last week. As we looked at Genesis chapter 1 and 2, we saw that God created mankind. And if you go back to the beginning of time in Genesis chapter 2, what you're going to notice is that when God created everything, he created everything perfectly. And a part of that creation was his creation of mankind. And you'll remember that he created both men and women, right? And what I would direct your attention to this morning is in the creation of Eve in Genesis chapter 2, what we find is that God created man and woman unique, distinctly different. And each had specific roles to play. Some have suggested that God created men and women because solely on the basis of being fruitful and multiplying, or reproduction, right? It's physically only possible to reproduce through man and woman, right? You have to have both parts of the equation. But really, if you read the entire section of Scripture there in Genesis chapter 2, what you find is that that's not the only reason that God created man and woman. What we find is that when God created woman, it says that he created her to be the perfect helper or helpmate for Adam. In other words, he created both to fill in the needs and the gaps of each other in one another's lives. In other words, Adam was the perfect complementarian to Eve, and Eve was the perfect complementarian to Adam. They didn't just come together for reproductive means, but rather they were both there for a specific purpose in each other's lives. They were both there to highlight the weaknesses and strengths of the other individual. In other words, my wife was given to me, if I was to put it in very personal terms, to overcome my inabilities and my weaknesses. And I know them, and she knows them well, and others know them as well. But the bottom line is, she was given to me to overcome those weaknesses, not just so that we could have children. She was given to me to help us go through this thing called life, and so that she could fill in my areas of need. And likewise, I was given to her for the same purposes. You see, man and woman were created to relate to one another perfectly, to be able to journey through life together, each providing for one another in ways that the other could not provide for themselves. Similarly, God gave the command in that moment to be fruitful and multiply, and he instituted in that chapter the institution of the family. In other words, in Genesis chapter 2, when God created man and woman and he told them to be fruitful and multiply, what he was doing in that moment was he was defining what the family was supposed to look like. Now, if I could step aside for a moment, I would say that men, the reason why the church should be passionate about defending marriage is because of this. We don't defend marriage just because statistics tell us that children turn out better in homes where both parents are present, or because we understand the ramifications of the homosexual agenda. We don't do it solely based on those things. The statistics are nice, but the reality is we defend marriage in a biblical way because God is the only person who has the authority to define what the family is. And because he created it and has the sole authority to define it, then we defend that as God's people. The question begs, if God defined marriage and God defined the family, and if God created all things perfectly, which he did, then why would we as a culture want to mess with what God created? Now, we know that sin disrupted the created order, right? We understand that because of Genesis 3, the fall of Adam and Eve in the garden, that everything has cataclysmically changed, right? But if God created man and woman to relate to one another, to have children, and he instituted the family relationship, and it was perfect then what that tells us is today that it's still inside those bounds that the family is most perfect. Obviously, sin soured the picture. In today's culture, Pastor Mason points out some of the startling statistics, and I'll let you read the chapter and read them, but let me give you a couple of them. He talks about the census that was taken, I believe it was in 1997, and he says that through that, they learned in 1995, only about 69% of children lived in two-parent homes. Now, if you could backtrack this through the history of our nation, that is about 17% lower than it was 10 years previously. So in other words, in 10 years, we dropped from about 86% to 69%. In the mid-80s, it was about 86% of children were raised in two-parent homes. And by 1995, only about 69% were raised in two-parent homes. Of the children that weren't, 4 million or 2% of the children lived with grandparents and 2% lived in other homes. Now that could be foster homes, that could be in adoptive homes. You fill in the blanks, but basically that's the statistics for you. 27%, he says, lived in one-parent homes. So that's almost one-third of all of our children growing up with either the absence of a father or the absence of a mother. Now, statistics don't take into effect remarriage and those who are being raised by stepfathers and stepmothers. It has no bearing on any of those things. But what he's telling us is that by 1995, almost one in three children was raised in a home where one of the players that God created to be in that home was absent. If you go to today's numbers, and I'm not going to take the time to go through all of them, but they're even more damaging in our society today. In fact, I heard a pastor say this last week on the radio that now one in three children grow up in a home and they don't even know who their father is. Isn't that interesting? I don't know if I've shared this story with you guys. I might have shared it last week, but if I didn't, let me refresh you on it. My wife and I have this great privilege of being able to take in Miss Mariana from the school, and many of you have met her if you've been at church. And several months back as we were preparing for the new school year. It was the end of last school year. We were going through her emergency contacts form. I think Brother Brad would know what I'm talking about. But basically, you have to have all these people listed on the contact form of if something happened, who are you going to contact, right? And we went through the list, and it was quite extensive. I think there's like 14 names on it or something, and they start normally with mom and dad and work their way down. And we're going down this list, and we get to the last name on the list. And by the way, I asked her permission last night to share this with you. We got to the last name on the list, and on that last name on that list, I read it to her, and she said, "I have no idea who that is." And we talked about it for a little bit, and I said, well, maybe it's an uncle or, you know, and I pulled up my iPad and started doing a Google search to try to find out who this individual was and couldn't find any names listed in the Sedalia area. And about an hour and a half later, after the discussion was long over with, we'd had dinner, she'd gone to her room, done some other things, she comes upstairs and she says, "I know who that is." And I said, "Who is it?" And she said, "Well, I texted my aunt, and that's my dad." Now, I want you to imagine growing up in a home that now you're 17 years old and you hear your dad's name and you don't even know it. And I said, Mariana, how can you not know your dad's name? And she said, well, that's just never what he was called. I've never known him by that name. Guys, that is a real problem in our society. 1 in 3 children today don't even know who their father is. 1 in 3. And when I read those statistics, I thought about that and I thought, you know, most of the guys in our church, this isn't gonna hit home at all. I mean, we know our children and maybe we don't have the relationships that we want to. But I want you to understand that from a church's perspective, even if all of that's true, even if everybody in this room has a great relationship with their children this morning, do you recognize that there is a need out there that only the church could fill? We could be filling in a very distinct way, showing these children the father figure that they're absent of if we would be willing to step out and do it. Mankind has destroyed what God established in the beginning because of sin. What has happened or what has led to absentee men in the family? Well, there's a number of observations you could make, but I want to narrow it down to 2. Why is it that we are living in a society where men are so absent? I think it's 2 things. First of all, once upon a time, the answer to that question would always be that children were growing up in either single-parent homes where the parents were divorced, or simply the mother did not know or want to acknowledge who the father was. Once upon a time, if a child was not living with their parent, you could say it was just one of those things. Either the mother made a mistake somewhere along the way and didn't want to acknowledge or didn't know who the father was, or simply put, parents had had a divorce and so the children were without it. In our society, I would add a second thing to it, and I would say that the reason so many men are absent from the family today is not so much the divorce rate and not so much the other things and the sexualized culture that we live in, though obviously they play a very important role in that. Today, what we are seeing is also an alarming number of children who are growing up without fathers who are yet at the same time physically present in the home but emotionally unavailable. I would say we are living in a time where we have generation of children being raised by fathers who may be physically present in the home but are emotionally unavailable. If you doubt that for a moment, I just want you to look around for a second. If you go to a women's event, you know what women do when they get together? They all get right next to each other and hug each other and laugh and share stories. Men get together at 6 a.m. in the morning, and what do? We spread out in a 400-seat auditorium to where nobody is within arm's length of each other, right? I mean, one exception to the rule. We make sure there is at least some breathing room because men, we're geared differently, aren't we? We like to have our space. We like to be separate. We like to relate. We like to have buddies. Brother Ned's one of my buddies. Cam's one of my buddies. I like to have buddies and like to tell stories to and jokes to and you know, and make light with. But there's something about us that we have a wall that kind of says, you know what, this is as close as you're going to get and no further. And unfortunately, once upon a time, or I should say, let me rephrase, once upon a time, fathers understood that that wall needed to not exist in the home, but that maybe they could have that wall up in society, but at home, their children and their wives, they knew them, and they understood what it meant to relate to one another. Well, now we're living in a time where men are taking what was previously something that was just a societal wall, and they're bringing it home, and we're keeping our children at arm's length. Now, this is the pot calling the kettle black. Let me go through my schedule over the last 4 days, okay? Over the last 4 days, I took the girls to conference. Friday, because I had been out of the office on Thursday, Friday I spent the day doing work. Saturday, I went down to the hospital to make a hospital visit. Then I went and played in a golf tournament. Sunday, I got up at 5:30 a.m. to get final preparations for a message ready. I came to church. I preached a message. I walked out of the doors and hopped on the road for 3 hours with teenage girls, which is quite a trip, let me tell you. Right now, we drove down. I didn't see Kelly on Sunday at all. Monday, we have conference. I get back home about 9 o'clock last night. Immediately, I'm a dead dog tired. So what do? I get my final things done for this morning and I go to bed. And some point today, this afternoon, I will walk home and I'll say, it's good to see you. I'm glad you're still here, right? My point is, that we have become increasingly more busy, whether it's work. And I'm just going to say, I could justify myself and say, you know, I'm just working too much. But the reality is, in there, I made some decisions. I didn't have to go play in a golf tournament on Saturday. I didn't have to do some things. I made those decisions. We make ourselves busy with our hobbies, with our time, with our work, so on and so forth, to a point that we've become absent away from our families and our children. And the consequences to that type of living, he gives us, are just astronomical. Statistics tell us that children are something like 400% more likely to get involved in criminal activity when they don't have a good relationship with their father. Then he gives us some more on page 35. I'll let you look through them, but let me go through them briefly. He says, first of all, what we have is compromised maturity. Men may have adult bodies, but they remain spiritual infants. Can anybody testify to that fact? I found myself a little bit in that statement. I have to be honest. They may have adult bodies, but they're spiritually, maybe even you could say emotionally immature. Second, he says, fathers often, because of this, now we're having a generation of fathers who are only friends. Because our parents maybe didn't do the time, they spent too much time at work, and our dads didn't spend as much time with us, now all of a sudden we're becoming fathers who don't really want to be fathers, we just want to be friends. By that, we mean that men typically have this extended childhood, and they seek to identify with their children as opposed to raising them. They're trying to be their friend. Their efforts at parenting are like the efforts that they had in high school, where they were trying to be accepted rather than trying to influence and to guide. I find myself with my children, even now at 3 years old, like that a little bit, trying to say, okay, Isaiah, how can I get you to like me more than mom, right? Because that's what you should do as a good parent, right? You know, and I've even offered dollar bills for the tractor fund and everything else I can think of, right? Third thing he says that happens because of absentee fathers is subsidized pictorial of manhood. Here's what he meant. He said, when a younger man sees a man living like this, the problem is heightened because extended childhood becomes the picture of what a man should be. In other words, what he's saying is we have a generational effect taking place. Because our fathers were absent, we've become absent, and guess what? Our children, they're going to be absent in their children's lives as well. Fourth, he says that we're having a problem of unmarried women. Now, this one is particularly interesting to me because I just read a new poll about this. He says, as the pool of men is already quite slim for women, it will get even more challenging as they are faced with men who are unfit for marriage. Those of you with daughters in the room, hang on to that thought for a second. There's a recent Fox News poll out that says that women today are much more likely to marry a man twice their age than in any previous generation. Why? Women are marrying older men because as they look at the men who are their age, guess what they're finding? They're like children. They're not like grown adult men. They're more like children. If you don't believe me, just go to a youth event with us sometime. What you find is you'll have these guys sitting over here and the girls over there. Listen, when I was in high school, I wanted to be as close to the girls as I could, right? But they sit over here and they sit over here and they do relate to each other. You know how they do it? Text message, social media, Facebook. Hey, I literally watched this happen at youth camp this year. One guy puts on his Facebook, hey, I'm at youth camp. And a girl responds from over here, 10 feet away, says, I'm here with you. Good night. Really? Is this what we've come to? But that's what listen now, we laugh. But these young men are 16, 17, 18 years old. And now all of a sudden, they're going to get to be to those ages where we start expecting them to have these long-lasting relationships. And guess what? Our daughters aren't going to find men anymore. They're going to find what? Still children, guys, young boys who don't know how to relate to them at all. And then you have this generational cyclical effect that continues on. Sixth, this is a big one for me. He writes in here that one of the effects of absentee men is life lived in fantasy. This might, he says, be the most frightening of all. Men in extended childhood treat their lives like one big fantasy world. They engage others with artificial means like pornography, social media, video games, instead of real life. He says, in their fantasy worlds, everything revolves around them. So they are incapable of contributing to a family, church, or community because all of them require sacrifice. In other words, basically, we're living in a time where young men would rather live in a fantasy world than live in the real world that God has given to them. That's all a direct ramification, he says, of what happens when fathers are absent. Now, I know when I read some of those things and I tell you about that, some of us relate to it really well. Others say, you know, that's not me. I was raised in a good home, or I've been a good father, or I didn't do those things. I demanded more of my children. But I want you to understand those things. I want you to hear them, because I want you to recognize the fact that maybe you did it right, but you're going to have grandchildren or children that are going to have to deal with where our culture is at. Or maybe you've got, you know, how do I want to put this? Maybe you've got a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law who's expressing concerns over these problems. I want you to realize this is where our culture is at. In fact, I believe that many of the heinous crimes that are committed today are ultimately a result of absentee fathers. Here's what I mean by that. We live in a culture where school shootings are becoming more and more rampant. Mr. Pollitt and I have talked about this a number of times. School shootings are becoming more and more rampant. I believe, and I think he believes to some degree, that is a direct result of what our young men are putting in their minds through video games. Why are these young men playing video games as much as they are? Because dad's not in the yard playing catch with them. When I grew up, my dad took me out and said, mow the lawn. And then when we got done mowing the lawn, then we played catch or whatever. We went fishing. We went hunting. Now in today's society, when men are absent, the ramifications just keep extending. It's like throwing a small pebble into a pond. It hits, there's a splash, but as you watch, there's rings that just keep making their way out. And if all of that's true, then men, what we need to understand this morning is that the solution to such a problem is men reclaiming their manhood, men reclaiming what they were given by God's authority and defined in the Bible. Biblical views of fathers, what is that supposed to be? What are we? If that's the bad, then what's the good? Well, I think there's two things I want to make a mention of this morning. The first is this. In the Old Testament, you will notice that fathers define the family. As you read through the Old Testament, what you find is that even when you get into boring books like the book of Numbers, as they're listing out who the children were that made it into the promised land, what you'll notice is that each child is defined by their father's name. In other words, such and such was begot by such and such, and such was begot by such and such, and they work it all the way back to one man, right? And as they work their way through it, the father is the defining name that works its way through it. Why is that? Well, because what God is teaching us in that moment is that the family is defined by who the father is. If you hear nothing else of what I say this morning, hear this one thing. Men, your family will be defined by your character and your integrity. Your family will follow your leadership, I promise. Now, I'm not saying in any way that I want to diminish what our wives do. You heard me begin this conversation by saying that each of us is an integral role in the family dynamic, right? Am I right about that? That my spouse is everything that I'm not, and I am to her what she is not. That is all true. But what I think God is teaching us through even those genealogical records is that men really set the pace for their family. They define what that family is going to be and what it's going to look like. In other words, if your family's not passionate about church, men, the way to get them passionate about church is not by sending them by themselves to church, but by you leading by example. If your family's not passionate about the Word of God and study, then don't say to your wife, well, you know, we need to have more time studying the Bible as a family, and then you stay at work. No, you come home, even if you have to go back to work, you come home and you lead that family in the Bible study, right? As you go, your family will go. You set the pace. You define, as it were, what your family is going to look like, and that's the way God ordained it. Secondly, I would add that in the New Testament, there's a unique characteristic about men that is given to us as the spiritual leaders of the home. Now, it's present in the Old Testament, but I want you to think about a couple of things. In the New Testament, in the book of Acts, we see thousands and thousands of people being saved, right? And in a rapid pace. You know what's interesting is, over and over and over again in the book of Acts, you will read a line that says something to the effect of, the father believed, or such and such believed, and his whole household was saved. Isn't that interesting? Some have believed that that means that if the father's saved, then the rest of the family is sanctified, and that's just bad theology. What they're telling us is that in their society, when dad stepped up to the plate and accepted the gospel, mom and children went, wait a second, if dad's leading us in that direction, we need to go with them. And so in the New Testament, we see in the book of Acts how men take this role as spiritual leaders. Not only that, but then you go into Colossians and Ephesians. There where passages are given to us that show that fathers are sharing the gospel through their relationship with their wives and with their children. In other words, if you were to put it in simple terms this morning, the way you relate to your children is supposed to be a testimony to them about how God relates to his created beings. Uh-oh, this is where I really had to look in the mirror. Because I have to tell you, if God was as short-fused with me as I am with my children from time to time, I would be in big, big trouble. But you see, that's what Paul teaches us in Colossians and Ephesians, that the way that the man deals in his home, the way that he relates to his wife, the way he loves her, and the way likewise that he disciplines and teaches his children is supposed to be a testimony or a mirror image of how God is supposed to be relating to us through his grace and his mercy. If both of those things are true then this morning, then what we believe is that the father is from whom the children will ultimately get their identity. Now, if that's true, then we've got a big problem in our culture, don't we? You see, if men are supposed to be the spiritual leaders, and men are the driving force behind the family, and that family is defined through the father and through the husband, then what that means is, men, your children will develop their identity based on what they find in you. Now, before you cast that aside, I want you to think about yourself for a moment. How do you identify yourself? And I have to tell you that I identify myself a lot through who my dad was and who my grandpa was. If I could give you a very personal testimony, I would tell you this. My grandpa never told my dad that he loved him. Now, when I came onto the scene, as often happens as you get older, get to be grandparents, you get to be a little bit more soft-hearted, right? And my grandpa told me he loved me all the time. But my grandpa never told my dad that he loved him. He worked all the time, worked 60 hours a week. He was very absent. And you know what my dad did in turn? My dad worked 60, 70 hours a week. I don't remember a time in my life. I can be personal with you guys this morning. I don't remember a time in my life when my dad was working any less than 3 jobs. You know what I've done to my son? I've spent way too much time away from home and not enough time with him. And when my dad wasn't working, you know what he was doing? He went to play golf. He went hunting. Went fishing. There were those encounters, those great moments when I got to go with him, and it really in a lot of ways defined me. But you know what? Most of the time, if I want to go fishing at Mr. Ned's pond, I don't want to take Isaiah. You know why? Because he's going to tangle up the line. He don't want to touch the fish. He's going to run up to the house. He's going to get in a mess. But you know what I do when I don't take him with me? I'm just being just like my dad. Don't get me wrong this morning. I love my dad. I think he was great. I'm so thankful for the home that I was raised in. But I can look at these statements and I can say, you know, that's true. What are the things that I like about life? I love to hunt and fish. I love to play golf. Where did I get those things from? I got them all from my dad and my grandpa. If my dad had been passionate about Broadway plays, I probably would be passionate about Broadway plays, as strange as that seems to me this morning. But I found my identity in who my dad was. And I can look at my brother and say the exact same thing. So you say, well, then my dad is the reason that I have all the problems that I have. Or your dad is the reason for all your problems. Well, men, it doesn't work like that. At some point, we have to take responsibility for ourselves, don't we? And we have to break the cycle. I've said before, it's been a long time since I said it, but I've said before, and I'll say it to you this morning, I want my children to make mistakes. I'm the person that I am today because of the mistakes I've made, and I think you would agree with the same thing. You are who you are because of the mistakes you've made. But you know what I want them to do? I want them to make their own mistakes. I don't want them to make mine. If I could get really personal with you this morning, my dad, at a very young age in my life, shared with me a struggle of his. And I'm not going to share it with you because it's not my business to do so. But he shared with me a struggle of his. And I can tell you that in my late adolescence and early adulthood, I picked up that same struggle. You know why? Because he never taught me how to deal with it. He just shared with me that he did. And he showed me that struggle. You see, men, it's our responsibility to help our children find their identity. And if we're not present to do so, they're going to find an identity in us. More is caught than is taught. And if we're not willing to sit there and actually teach them, then what they're going to do is they're just going to assume that what dad's doing is okay, and they're going to pick up that identity. Now, I don't know about everybody in this room. Maybe some of you had dads that you don't relate well with and so on and so forth. But for me, my dad was my superhero. And when I learned of his struggle, it crushed my little world, destroyed me. Even now, 25 years later, I still struggle to even talk about it because it crushed my world. Because it took dad from being a superhero to just an ordinary individual. And it just destroyed me. What about you? What are you doing to your children? And what have you done to your children that needs to be dealt with? So what's the solution? If the problem is absentee parenting leads to this identity crisis in our culture, then what's the solution? Well, it's really simple, men. If the problem is sin and the ramifications are more sin, because the book of Proverbs tells us that when the father spares the rod, folly follows. If the problem is sin and the ramifications to that is that more sin will abound, then the solution is only Christ, because only Christ can deal with sin. It's always about Jesus, men. Men must position themselves first with their God through Christ, and then they will see how to relate to the created order. If you position yourself in a right relationship with Christ individually, it will have a ripple effect or ramifications on the way you relate to your wife and your children. All right, that's all the time we have this morning, but let me say this. I know last week was a little bit of the bad news. This week was a little bit of the bad news. Next week, we dive in for the next 4 weeks on all of the good news. Let's do the practical application of what I just told you, and that is that the answer is always Jesus. So my challenge to you this morning as we leave is simply this. Your children are going to find their identity in their father. What identity do you want them to find and make that happen this week? Let's have a word of prayer and we'll be dismissed. Father, thank you for this morning, for these great men, their dedication and their willingness to spend time together, even at this early hour, their willingness to come together and to seek your face, to become better fathers and husbands. That's our desire. We want to be changed, and we know that we can only be changed through a right relationship with your son, Jesus Christ. And this morning, we come before you and we confess. Our earnest prayer is, conform us to the image of him so that our families will find that same identity in themselves. I want my children, I want Isaiah this morning to find his identity in Christ. And in order for that to happen, then God, I know that you must convict me and show me how I'm not conformed to your image, because he's going to pick up whatever I put out there. And so help me this morning in a very personal way. Help me to be conformed to the image of your son so that he might be conformed to that image as well. In Jesus' name we pray these things. Amen. Thank you, guys. Give somebody a handshake and you'll be dismissed.